We're here today to interview Bob Plant and Robert Potter. They both work as business English lecturers at the University of Applied Sciences in Landshut. Bob Plant is from Australia and Robert Potter is from the UK. They both have extensive history in language training in multiple cultures and residence in English and non-English speaking countries. Also, they both have experience in project management advisory. During this interview, we would like to learn more about the experience with typical challenges for students and business clients working in an international setting. Bob and Robert, thank you very much for taking the time for the interview.
No worries, you.
First of all, we'd like to get to know something about you. Robert, could you please describe briefly your background as trainer and someone with international experience?
Certainly. I've worked as a business English trainer mainly in Central and Eastern Europe for about 20 years, covering many, many different industries from tax and audit through pharmaceuticals and software engineering. I spent a lot of that time in office environments with helping people deal with international communication. I've run courses for project managers through local social organizations, as well as designing and delivering and rolling out my own training courses, coordinating them across borders.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob, how about you? What is your experience?
Many years ago, I had finished high school. I thought I would take a gap year, like many do. I went to Trier, which is in Germany, and I got thrown into a difficult situation. They needed an English trainer on the spot. And I was both a student and a trainer in front of 80 Germans and Eastern Europeans. And it was very, very, very scary. And I was nervous to no end. But something caught on. And when I went back to Australia, I did a certain education, what's called a workplace training and assessment certificate. And when I came back to Germany, I implemented that straight away with working with companies such as Siemens in Regensburg, in the pharmaceutical industry. Basically offering results-oriented English. So looking to give courses that were for a specific negotiation coming up in the next 6 months or for a specific project that was being rolled out, there was less focus on grammatical correctness and a lot more focus on getting the job done.
Thank you. Also with us today is Bill Field. Bill Field works also as an English lecturer at the University of Applied Sciences in Landshut and also as a course developer. Bill, can you please tell us something about your experience?
Yeah, it is specific to both language training and project management. So I've been a trainer in multiple different countries. I actually began training in the areas of finance and business management or business practices, so it wasn't actually languages. Later moved to languages. However, I've both worked in project management in Canada, Germany, and in this case, a South Pacific country called Vanuatu that many of us aren't familiar with, where I was running project management for international development projects. As a Canadian, I was a consultant where I both did training and worked in project management, both in Canadian and United States projects. And so I've got quite a few years of experience in those areas.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, first we would like to speak about more general topics regarding communication. What do you believe are some key essentials for effective non-face-to-face communication, in your opinion? Bob, would you like to start?
Sure. Three words: discipline, respect, and caution. Non-face-to-face communication means you've got to be disciplined to give replies to emails or phone calls within a due time frame. Respect, that means always appreciate the time and the input of the other person. And in terms of caution, check twice. Check twice your emails, check twice what you're going to write, and think, can it be considered in any other way?
Okay, Bill, what are your thoughts?
I think it's really important. We'll assume non-face-to-face, either telephone or emailing. Either way, initially establishing contact. Many people do that, it seems, very abruptly. Americans are famous for not even giving a name and just writing what they want in an email. That could be an example. So first establishing, we'll say, social contact. Identifying the purpose for your communication, that's sometimes left out. Always considering politeness and knowing politeness is different in different cultures. And then, very importantly, making clear expectations, what should be delivered or what the needs are, etc.
Thank you. Robert, is there anything else you would like to add?
Generally, with any form of communication, whether it's face-to-face or non-face-to-face, as the question asked, I say always know why you are doing something. So if you can answer yourself, if you can answer for yourself, why am I sending an email, not a telephone call, or why am I asking for this information? If you know the answer to that and it's good enough for you, then great. Because I meet many people who go to meetings and or ask for things and they don't know why they are doing that, which is a waste of their valuable time as well as everyone else's. Also, I would say use active verbs. English is a noun. English, it is a noun. English is a language which focuses very much on the verb. And if you can see easily what the verb is, then it focuses the language producer and the auditor of the language. So rather than have a meeting, you'd say to meet, for instance. That's what I would say.
Thank you. What do you believe are some key essentials for effective face-to-face communication compared to the non-face-to-face communication? Bob?
I would straight away say active listening. Mm-hmm. Listen, and listen with both ears, listen to full sentences, and do not interrupt. Listen first, then react. Secondly, I would also say follow up quickly. It's great to have a meeting, but if nobody knows what's happening after the meeting, it was a waste of a meeting. So always have clear expectations on what the follow-up is going to be.
Thank you. Robert, anything you would like to add?
Well, I quite agree with closely listening and listening to the third degree, not just knowing what the person says, but understanding the context behind what that person is saying. And I would also add check to see how that person is reacting or responding to your communication and adjust accordingly, I would say.
Do you agree, Bill, or is there anything else?
Yeah, I think directly it mirrors what was already said. One thing is knowing the social protocol of the culture you're communicating with. Often, if you're in a very different culture, you might not actually know what's acceptable behavior face-to-face. And another thing is not skipping things. Often in many cultures, you just get to the point, and for other cultures, that's completely unacceptable. So notice, recognizing you can't just skip over what is politeness or et cetera, what's proper social behavior.
Thank you. All three of you have helped managers to communicate better and to avoid misunderstandings. What do you believe are some of the crucial elements in successful communication across cultures and borders? Bill, would you like to start?
Then one thing that I've already heard today that I think is really relevant is listening, or if it's face-to-face, it might simply be reading effectively the other's needs. Reading effectively, of course, it could be an email or reading somebody's face, but often open listening, active listening isn't maybe done enough. And one thing that I've run into that Germans specifically really struggle with, that Anglos are more comfortable with, is recognizing ambiguity. So somebody is ambiguous often for a reason. If they're not definitely clear, that might just be because it's a lack of communication between the two, but it might be done for a reason. That's especially strongly evident in other cultures, such as Middle Eastern cultures or something. If you can't get a straight answer, often there's a reason behind it. So recognizing why something is ambiguous. Important, I think, to be successful is identifying the cause-effect. So for some cultures, they won't automatically see why you want something done. So explaining what the benefit or the effect from that is. And also, very importantly, present commitments. And in other words, what's coming from your side, we can say. And the final thing, it was voiced earlier, show gratitude. Show that you appreciate somebody's effort. And that doesn't just mean the please and thank you that we attach to the end of a sentence.
Thank you. Robert?
I would certainly agree with what Bill just said. On top of this, show stress patience and show an awareness that the other person has a different worldview. and you will have to be patient with that. So, for instance, as Bill just said now, be not skipping the small talk, for instance. I've been with managers who say, oh God, we have to talk about the weather for 5 minutes before we start. But no, it's not. There are very good reasons for doing that, not least the building rapport condition. And furthermore, I'd recommend asking about other people's work realities, because I know people who work, software development team managing it from Stuttgart, calling Mumbai, and people in Mumbai, just in Indian people, local people, saying, yes, we can do it, yes, we can do it. And then when they ask about their work realities, they said, well, I'm going to my sister's wedding, which is 6 weeks of me being on the other side of the country, and I can't do it. You see, so if you don't ask about people's work realities, they will not tell you, you see, or they may not tell you. So it's especially pertinent when deadlines are involved.
Okay, Bob, anything you would like to mention?
I would firstly concur with Robert, 100% patience.
Mm-hmm.
Patience. Patience in misunderstandings, patience in thinking about where they're coming from, how they're thinking, what is their business approach to everyday life. As Bill briefly mentioned, Middle Eastern countries, the essential drinking of the tea to build rapport. In other countries, it could be talking about the weather. Patience in working through the misunderstandings when they come up, and they will come up. On top of that, the only additional point that I would add is a self-awareness of your own strengths and weaknesses within the language, and your willingness to be tolerant of the similar strengths and weaknesses of the language who you're dealing with. Because sometimes, if you've got a great level of English, you want to show off a little bit. But when you're dealing with people potentially from South America or Asia, you've got to scale back your language. And the same can be also true when you're dealing with native speakers. They throw out the idiomatic expressions, they throw out the quick speech, and then you get lost. So again, be aware of your strengths and weaknesses in your language, but also try to imagine what the others have for strengths and weaknesses in the language.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. This was very interesting, and we will hear more from you later in the course.